Hello there, I'm Dr. Ben Fung, and welcome back to Practice Compliance, a podcast mini-series covering all things rehab business and practice compliance. And we're producing this mini-series because it is so needed. There are so many people that are reaching out, whether they're looking into cash PT or they're currently in a situation, they're not quite sure if what they're doing is actually compliant with regulations, with the law, and it's time to clear the air. Now, in this episode, it does run just a little bit longer. It's in the 30-minute mark. My goal is, of course, in 15 to 20 minutes for this mini-series. Will probably be a total of 5 or 6 episodes. This one wraps up kind of the nitty-gritty aspects of compliance, and the next episode, episode 3, will move into a very popular topic, cash-based physical therapy practice. So, without further ado, let's go ahead and tune back in to where we left off with hypothetical situations that may sound a little familiar. Now let's peel this back a little further, and I'm going to throw a couple of hypotheticals at you, let's see if we can rapid fire this as compliant, non-compliant, or the ever popular physical therapy answer, it depends.
There's a lot of it depends in compliance, Ben. Oh, yeah. So let's start.
Let's see what we can do. There's only a couple of them, but let's run back to the sniff. Sniffs are, just so our audience knows, for most payers, sniff, they go by rug levels, which means it's a certain amount of minutes, a certain amount of frequency in the treatment plan, a certain amount of disciplines will yield a certain resource utilization group level, which you then get reimbursed for. How much, this is a question I get a lot, is how much chit-chat is allowed when you're gathering that in treatments? You're supposed to be one-on-one. You're supposed to be at point of service documentation is what everybody's pushing for. But where is that? Is there a gray area? Is there a straight line? When is it, unproductive, unskilled chit-chat when it comes to gathering those sniff minutes?
I think you want to make everything be productive. And that's the trick. So you want to make it purposeful. In the sniff, you're asking a lot of questions. And the questions should be the type of questions that you, as a skilled therapist, only you can interpret the responses that the patient's giving you. So a lot of chit-chat about the weather may not be appropriate in physical therapy, but it may be appropriate for the speech-language pathologist to get a determination on, the patient's orientation to time and place, so to speak. So you want to make those minutes purposeful. So that's my response. And that probably wasn't too good of a yes, no, or gray area response.
No, I think actually really much is, because I think you get this sometimes, and I think you get this from some of the companies that have historically had issues, which is, just go in the room and talk. So, because you just go in the room and talk doesn't mean those are billable minutes, because you're not being therapeutically purposeful along their plan of care across the course of care. Is that correct?
And Ben, I've served as an outsourced compliance officer for about 15 months for an organization that had about 80 skilled nursing contracts. It was a contract therapy company. And probably almost every investigation that I was called in to do because there was a patient complaint was related to that. And sometimes it was the patient or the patient's family that was participating that perceived that it was non-purposeful, and sometimes it was the patient. And I can tell you that in most instances there was, a problem, but a good investigator is going to determine when there really wasn't a problem, because either the patient or the family didn't understand what the therapist was doing.
So clarity and communication is really big then, because you're always there. It's not like an outpatient where you get pulsatile exposure. This is all the time. So that's really good to know.
Yeah.
Now let's talk about home health. Home health gets funny because we're so used to the 8-minute rule. Maybe just for the audience, you can let us know, if I go in, is it time related for anything at all, for some of it? Do I have to be time sensitive? Where is that line again with chit-chatting and maybe a couple of red flags when it comes to, one of the executive directors or rehab directors telling me to get in there just to get in there?
Oh, You never want to get in there just to get in there. I serve on a advisory board of a home health agency in Chicago. And I was just down at a meeting last week. I'm actually the patient advocate that sits on the advisory board. And, you know, one of the things that's always talked about is, you know, who can go in, who can start the OASIS, you know, who can do what. And when the therapist comes in, and we all know that PT has to initiate, you know, so it can't be an OT coming in there. OT can follow PT, at least from a Medicare regulation viewpoint. We don't bill according to the 8-minute rule, as you know, in a home health agency. You're billing based on the visit, but respectfully, you should be in the visit the minimum number of time. And I'm, you know, off the top of my head, I want to say it needs to be 45, but don't count me on that. I'm not a home health regulatory expert, but when you go in and you're doing your visit, it's not an in and out. And you've got a number of things that you have to document. And I think working in the home environment should keep you busy, as you know.
So those that are, you know, being instructed, hey, get in there, you know, lay your barrier down, lay your bag down, cleanse your hands, you know, take your vitals and just check their knee extension. That is a no-go.
Actually, that is a no-go. And it's, you know, one of the things that I always try to do, having been through some difficult challenges over the past 2 years with family members that, you know, that had situations and whatnot, I had a chance to watch and observe and really say, what is it like from a patient's perspective? And you're doing nothing for the patient to come in and do what you've described, Ben. People have a reasonable expectation that physical therapy is going to help them restore their function.
So it just can't be a checkup. And I think that's a, and that gets sold sometimes, I think, under certain due pressures. Let's go ahead and move back into the outpatient world. I got a couple scenarios and we have some questions coming through online to rattle through, and then we can kind of recirculate. I am in California. I'm in California and I see a patient. Yeah. Let's just call it a Medicare patient. So I'm doing my manual therapy for 15 good minutes, you know, solid good stuff. We're getting good functional returns. And I pass it off to a tech, and this patient stays in the clinic for another 45 minutes. So they're there in my clinic for an hour. I bill one of manual therapy, but they're with my tech or they're with my aide, and they're doing a bunch of really high quality Therax, but I'm doing something else. I'm not seeing anybody. I might be documenting in the office with the window, but I'm also billing 3 more extra units of Therax. Is that okay? Is it not okay? Let's analyze that.
Well, the analyzation on that is no, no, and no. So I'm going to be pretty clear on that. And there's ways that you can turn that around. I get people problem solving with me about that all the time. So Ben, if you're over there doing your documentation, but feel that you have visual line of sight and you got a great tech because the tech happens to be an ATC, and so they really know their stuff, it's not going to cut it from a Medicare perspective. So, you know, some workarounds on that are, do you have a PTA that could provide that level of assistance for you after you've done some high quality manual therapy for 15 minutes? Do you have a couple of other patients where that Medicare patient could be in a group and a qualified therapist could provide constant attendance to the group? That would mean a PT or a PTA, still not the tech. There's ways to work around it, but I think the quickest way to get yourself in trouble is not understanding the rules, and Medicare has made the rules real clear. As you know, this is not a gray area at all. You know, the Medicare 8-minute rule, direct one-on-one treatment when you're attending to a Medicare patient is pretty clear. And I've been in enough federal audits to explain that it's very clear to them too.
It's the clear one. It is, I think. There's no gray area at all. And you mentioned the group. Let's talk about that. We had an online question about group billing versus, you know, incident two. Maybe you can kind of flesh that out. What would that actually look like physically in the clinic, and how would a clinician bill for that?
Okay, well, in group therapy, you have to take a look at your local coverage determination to see how they want you to document. Where you are in California, Noridian has removed their local coverage determination for the whole western part of the country, so you can't really look it up. But if you're in other parts of the country and have Novitas or Palmetto or WPS or NGS, their local coverage determination is basically going to say something like this, which is always best practice. If you're going to conduct a therapy group, and that's CPT code 97150, you have to have at least two people in the group. Now, I can't tell you the number of times I've seen somebody bill for group, and I said, how many other patients were in the group? Well, we only bill Medicare for the group. We bill the other insurance companies one-on-one. Well, you can't do that. And the other insurance companies notwithstanding, you can't do that to Medicare represent that somebody was in a group if they were the only person billed for the group. So the definition of a group is two or more individuals. They do not have to be performing the same activity, but there has to be the constant attendance of a qualified therapist, which is a PT or a PT, a qualified clinician, attending to the group and assisting the group members through whatever has been assigned. Your documentation needs to describe how many people were in the group and how the activities that were done in the group contribute to the plan of care and the goals. So that's the little hitch there. You can't just get away with billing a group because you weren't one-on-one. You are obliged to write some documentation. Now, for people that are considering group, one of the things that CMS has is a document called the 11 PT and OT billing scenarios, in which they describe your opportunity to either select group when you've got more than one patient, or to basically, if you have two patients been, say, at the same time, and, you know, somebody came in later, somebody came in early, and all of a sudden your 10 to 10:30 has two patients in it, you can go back and forth between the two patients and appropriately apportion the one-on-one minutes from patient A. Let's just say that as you were moving back and forth and assisting and individual queuing and directing and being one-on-one, that patient A had 12 of your minutes and patient B had 18 of your minutes. You would just simply add those minutes to the most appropriate code on those patients' treatment. Let's just say it was therapeutic exercise. So you would add 12 minutes to the total time treatment code minutes for patient A, and 18 minutes to the total timed, you know, treatment code minutes to patient B. So it's up to you to determine if the therapy can be delivered and apportioned as one-on-one to each patient as you move back and forth, or it really could not be apportioned. You were really doing more of a group activity. And some of the MACs, by the way, Ben, when they see a group billed that's on their edits, which means that when you send in the bill, that code becomes flagged for a prepayment review. Is that bad? No, you just need to be prepared and you need to have your documentation in order. You know, I can give you examples of other codes that are on prepayment review, like Whirlpool, fluidotherapy that hand therapists, you know, use is billed as Whirlpool. So, but group is something, I won't want to call it a flag, just be aware that some of the MACs might have an edit. So they would expect to have documentation to support that your use of the code.
Excellent. And we got just in that moment, I think we're getting some trending going on. We have a lot of questions flowing through. These, I think the next couple are pretty clear, but I think it's important to ask because the compliance is pretty situation-based. We have four Med Bs, since we're talking about groups. They're in a total knee program. Everybody comes in at the same time, in the same hour, and they all leave at the same hour. But everyone gets billed four units. Oops. Yes or no?
No.
It's no. A little obvious, but, yeah. But you know, at the same time, why? Let's just put black and white this one.
Okay, black and white is if there's one therapist can't be one-on-one with four patients at the same time. They can be one-on-one with one patient at a time. So let's just, you know, hypothetically, in that hour, if it was run as a group, but each patient got 15 minutes of one-on-one, each patient gets billed one unit of one-on-one, or each patient for that total hour gets billed the group code. So those are pretty much your choices. Now, let's turn the scenario upside down. You've got a PTA that's helping you. So all of a sudden, you've cut the problem in half. So you have another resource that's assisting you. So, and if people are being asked to bill Medicare inappropriately. And once again, we've just discussed that Medicare is pretty clear on what the 8-minute rule is and pretty clear on their definition of one-on-one. That's something that they need to ask about. And since we kind of took a theme of interviews today, that might be a great interview question. Will I be asked to treat more than one patient at the same time and, you know, be given instructions on how to appropriately bill? And will I have the resources to assist me if I'm being asked to bill for more than one patient during a time period?
I think that leads to a great segue too. I know we have a whole bunch more online questions, but we'll circle back to it. Say, you know, we've gone down the rabbit hole pretty good. And, you know, all these interview questions were great. They're clear. There's no red flags. This is perfect. I'm in Hawaii and with the, you know, the perfect practice, the perfect opportunity, the perfect pay rate. But then something kind of switches and I'm starting to be told how to bill and it doesn't quite feel right. I've reached out to the compliance officer and, you know, they've kind of just assured me things are okay. What are some next steps when some of these clear rules are being bent or broken for an employee? What should they do? What action should they take or not take? And how do you rectify that situation?
I've actually been involved in complaints and investigations, meaning an employee has complained under a company's policy of non-retaliation, and the compliance officer or the appropriate, you know, designee has explained, here's how we do it. Sometimes a therapist just might not understand the rules, and actually a framework of explaining and walking through the rules. You have a reasonable expectation for you to be provided the rules, whether that's from, you know, Medicare resources or from other payer resources on how to do this. You know, many times somebody comes in and says, I read this online, or this is the way that we did it at the last place that I worked at. And in compliance, you should be dealing with regulations, you know, so, and regulations regarding, you know, many of these things are pretty black and white, Ben, and every, you know, job candidate or every new employee, new DPT student has a right to say, could you just show me where I could find that? You know, you don't want people out there Googling stuff on their own, because who knows what they end up Googling. And it could be advice from 5 or 10 or 20 years ago, because some things never disappear on the web, including old Medicare regulations. So you, as a candidate or as an employee, want to say, could you please show me in the current regulations, what are you following here? You know, and you don't want to necessarily put a threatening tone. You want to just say, I need information. Now, if it goes downhill from there, then there's other options that you need to follow, because we know that many times people are in scenarios where they feel they have to leave a job. I left one of my first jobs, Ben, before there was even a word called compliance, because I was being asked to do something that I knew was not right.
So what then do we do? Say, like, I, you know, say I'm a new grad and I'm working for this place. I love this place. I genuinely like the people, but my boss is starting to ask me to do things I just doesn't quite feel right. I mean, I just took the jurisprudence exam and just certain things are pinging off in that little conscious zone in my brain, head, heart, whatever you call it. I've voiced my concerns. Nothing seems to be done about it. What can I do to protect myself, especially if I'm not sure that I'm doing something out of compliance? Do I document it? Do I send myself an email? Do I write it down in a notebook? What are the best steps at that point to kind of go down and unfortunately escalate the situation, if only for myself?
Well, sure. Certainly taking some notes. Think of the little, you know, notebook. I carry a little notebook in my purse that I can take notes in, or you can make a voice note in your smartphone. But to just simply come back to your supervisor and continue to ask the same questions. And if you're being told by your supervisor that it's okay to bill 8 units with 2 patients to Medicare in 1 hour, or the scenario you had where it was 4 Med B, you have to make a choice based on your understanding that you can only bill one, especially if you've looked up the Medicare Benefits Policy Manual. Now, here's something interesting, Ben. The APTA, AOTA, and ASHA have come up with a document a couple years ago that was designed in response to the SNF industry and the whole business about productivity in minutes. So they came out with an ethical service delivery statement that was called a consensus statement on clinical judgment. And that was code speak for they were hearing a lot from the industry in the SNF industry about therapists being, you know, kind of forced to up code and, you know, feeling a little bit vulnerable in those settings. This year, they've come out with a new document, the same group of people, called compliance reporting. So they've upped the game a little bit. And that's a document that's readily available at APTA and ASHA and the AOTA's website. And it basically provides for you to direct yourself to compliance, your compliance department. It also kind of loosely suggests you might want to, you know, call one of the national organizations and express your concerns, but always with compliance. Your best bet is to keep it internal and push for the answers that you need. Now, if somebody provides you with, you know, concrete information regarding the 8-minute rule and they're producing for you and take you over to the computer and show you the various resources on the Medicare website or the Blue Cross Blue Shield website that says you must follow the 8-minute rule, whatever it may be, then you should feel very comfortable that what they're doing is appropriate because they're showing you the accurate and correct guidances for either your contracted, you know, managed care plans like Blue Cross or with Medicare and other federal health care programs. If they can't, that might be the opportunity for you to determine that you're going to leave a position. And that's a very, very hard thing to do. You know, and that's
terrifying. And it's heart shattering. Terrifying.
And I know you've sent a couple people my way that have confided in me some scenarios at their places where they got in. They thought it was going to be the job of their dreams. They were very excited. The location was good. They loved the uniforms. They loved the other employees. The rah-rah and everything was absolutely
great.
Fantastic.
Yeah.
Yeah. And they got a bonus sign on, and maybe they're going to get some of their tuition reimbursed and
company
whatnot.
Car too, of course.
Yeah. I wish. So, you know, people then are, you know, all of those things are in their head. They're going, oh my gosh, I just started this job and things are turning very, very south. So that's why you want to step back in, deal with compliance and deal with getting the most accurate advice that you can get. And as a compliance person, I've worked both sides of the fence, and to both sides of the fence, I say you start inside. Your company should have a policy on non-retaliation, and you may wear down the compliance officer. You may wear down your clinical director, and I've been in scenarios like that. And then at some point, when you feel that this is not the right fit for you, you might have another decision to make. Now, in the rarest of instances, you may feel that your decision may be to step a little bit further with getting some outside guidance, particularly if you come across something that is horrific that you have primary knowledge of. So,
every Medicare B patient's getting, you know, non-1-on-1 time, but always gets independent units for the hour, every hour.
Yeah. And I can tell you, you know, one scenario from a number of years ago, the therapists, this was in an outpatient setting, you know, the therapists were treating the patients. And they were just writing down what they did, and somebody in the billing office was deciding what codes to bill. And what they were doing was, you know, the old term upcoding. And upcoding means either billing a higher code, like say, for example, the therapist had documented they were doing X, but another code paid $5 more. So somebody independently in the billing office was picking a different code. So that, you know, so that's really not representing what the therapist did. And or unit padding. And unit padding means, well, why don't we just bump up a unit here, bump up a unit there. And, you know, in my whole entire career, I've actually, one hospital I worked in, a therapist was fired for doing that. And, you know, in the SNF industry, I've been involved in a number of reviews and was consulted in where the therapist just simply billed for the patient and didn't see him. Or the company felt free to bill for the patient when the therapist wasn't there that day.
Yikes.
So those, yeah. So they're very rare. But sometimes people are in extenuating circumstances and they don't make the right ethical decision.
And it's just, the lesson is there. Just be accurate. Document what you do. Bill for what you do. it's almost too simple, but yet it gets kind of complicated, I think, under those high pressure circumstances, with all those things to consider. It's in the back of your head. And I guess when it finally comes to it, if push comes to shove, how could a clinician protect their license, or do they need to, if they were, quote, forced to, you know, bill this or you're fired? What do they do? How do they protect themselves?
Well, a clinician shouldn't bill this. They should be willing to be fired. And remember that we're not just talking about whistleblowers here, going to the United States Attorney or going to whistleblowerattorney.com, which actually is a real website. But actually, you may have an obligation as a licensee in your state to report this type of activity to your board.
Ooh, there it is also, guys. Yeah. So you have to hold your ground. You are a licensed professional. Yes, you're employed, but no one can bully you to do this.
No, and this is funny because, you know, I work around the country. Recently, a scenario came up where somebody reported something to the state board, and the state board came on board to investigate. And I've had a couple of scenarios and you know, where this has happened, where people have called me in, and it worked out okay because somebody saw something that really wasn't what they thought they saw. You know what I mean?
And that's why you want to start inside. You know, you want to clarify that in-house first.
And here's a good example. A newer therapist went to the state board and said, the EMR program at my practice, and so of course they were going against the person that owned the practice, is changing my coding. Well, it comes to find out that indeed the EMR program was changing. But guess what? Under the 8-minute rule, if you do 7 minutes of an ultrasound, you're never going to bill ultrasound. The 7 minutes are going to roll up into something else. So the neat thing about this is the practice owner basically in defense at the state board hearing showed how this worked to the board. And it was one of those kind of, oh, yeah, okay. So indeed, it was true that the EMR was changing the codes, but it was following the 8-minute rule. You know, you can't bill for any code that's less than 8 minutes, but you can add. So, for example, you do manual therapy for 7 minutes. You add those 7 minutes to something else. So even though you might have wrote manual therapy, 7 minutes on your billing ticket, it doesn't mean that your coding was changed. It means that what was billed was according to the Medicare's 8-minute rule. So that's a perfect example. But people should understand their practice act and any obligations they have to report.
I think that's a great line to shift back to some questions, guys. And I'll just make this comment. When you're listening in on this, you know, Nancy and I are bantering back and forth. We're talking about a lot of, you know, some stories. And, you know, if it sounds too familiar or if it feels wrong, A, it may not be wrong. B, it could be wrong. But it's kind of on you to ask the right questions in the right manner to your direct supervisor and your compliance officers. But also, when you find that those answers are just black and white wrong, like the many Medicare things, and I've been asking, I almost feel like they're silly Medicare questions, but I'm asking them purposely because I know these are real situations that are being faced out there, even by the most seasoned of professionals. So let's move on to probably one of the hottest topics lately is cash PT. And unfortunately, that's all the time we have for this episode 2 of Practice Compliance. Episode 3 will pick up where we are leaving off with Cash PT, as well as answering some of the earlier social media questions that we received during this particular recording session. So that means there's plenty of opportunity to submit more questions through email, through social media, and all of our contact information is available in the show notes below. Until next time, this is Dr. Ben Fung with UpDoc Media, the content you need to know delivered with clinical precision. Take care.